bit more clunky. There's the thing called the Anderson principles for key person. So there's three rules. They need to be an employee. If you want the benefit to be paid in without, if you want the premium to be non-taxed, then they need to be there needs to be an employer-employee relationship. They need to own less than 5% of the shares. And there's a thing which HMRC deem, which is it has to be a short-term policy, as in it should only be for a term for as long as that person is a viable financial interest in the business as an employee, which is a very grey area. And historically, I think what used to happen is a lot of the banks, when they were doing it, just did everybody on five-year policies because it kept it short-term. So the Anderson principles. Sorry, Dave. Yeah. So the Anderson principles absolutely define whether it's the premium is tax deductible, and therefore the payment, the benefit if claimed, isn't, or likewise if it's not tax deductible, which would be your business owners typically, but then when they do make a claim, it comes in more like a capital as opposed to a trading receipt. So you just need to be conscious of that. The short term bit, I would be very wary of anyone just doing 5-year terms because they think that protects them. Because again, I've had cases before where clients have got to the end of the term, they're now uninsurable because some issues have manifested, and you've set them up to be in a position all of a sudden where they can't cover that person. So I either use 5-year renewables, or I think you can make the justification if you know someone's going to be a valued asset to that business for longer than 5 years, there is no, it doesn't ever say 5 years. It's quite grey in terms of the wording. So just know the Anderson principles, and then you should be pretty clear on whether something is tax deductible or not.
Can I bring in Dave from North Wales Independent Advice? Dave, you put a couple of comments in about them being principles, not rules. So you had any situations where the actual treatment has been different or it's been challenged? I think you said it's the tax tail wagging the protection dog.
Yeah. First of all, we're not tax advisors, so I would dump it by saying that you should get your accountant to write to the local inspector of taxes and try and get some sort of ruling from them. But that's like trying to get blood out of a stone. So it's very difficult. But stick it in your suitability report, and then at least you're informing the client that's what they should do, and you're protecting yourself a little bit. You'd have thought John Anderson would have had something better to do in 1944 when he came up with these rules, but there you go. I just look at the need, and I look at it as a long-term basis. You have to think about if somebody ceases to be insurable, something happens. So concentrate on the protection, put in something about contact the local inspector of taxes, and point out, have a few paragraphs about the possibility of getting tax relief, but also pointing out if they do get tax relief, that's likely to mean that the proceeds in the event of claim will be taxable. Is it better to get tax relief on a much lower premium and pay tax on a much higher benefit payment, or ideally to get something from the local inspector saying no, we would treat it as capital receipts, so not taxable. Going back to the point Andrew made, normally capital receipts are not taxable, don't look at the tax relief for the premiums, look at the benefit for the client.
Great. Can I bring Adam Kaplan? You've shared views on a few points, particularly executive versus individual IP. Can you give us some of your experiences? You talk particularly in the context of one-man band firms.
Yes, hello. To be honest, it was just agreeing with everything that Lee said, to be fair. We don't tend to deal with the clientele that Lee does. Most of our stuff, if not all of it, is pretty much one-man bands with a spouse where they kind of split the income across both parties for tax efficiency purposes. But I've sat with Lee and done a lot of work on this as well. And when you, a particular case recently, I had a client who was a higher rate taxpayer, and someone else set up an exec IP policy for $4,000 a month, and they actually put in writing that $4,000 a month was tax-free, which is incorrect because the money gets paid into the business and then you pay it as a normal income, which is then subject to normal tax rules. So when we've done the numbers on it, the actual net take home was around about £3,000 after tax, which he was not happy about, as you can imagine. When we looked at personal IP, we were able to get him a policy at 65%, which worked out as a net income around about £3,400 and something. So whilst it's nice to put things through your business because everybody wants to save a little bit of corporation tax, when we actually did the numbers side by side, his exact words were, well, I'm not really bothered about saving a few quid on my premiums when I can clearly see that the personal income protection is going to pay me far more money. So it's about, like Lee said, weighing up the pros and cons of actually, are you just doing this through the business because you want to save a little bit of corporation tax? For this client in particular, and going back to what Lee said about the transferability, and it's something that I did look into a year or so ago, is that unlike Relevant Life, where you can transfer it quite easily, and we've done that many, many times over the years, unless you keep the business running, like Lee said, it's really not appropriate for someone. This guy in particular said that if he was off work long term, the business would fold. Therefore, the priority was for him to have a personal policy that paid a higher monthly benefit that will continue to pay him regardless of the position of the business, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And you've got to consider with Exec IP, there's only two insurers. So if you've got someone with some medical history and all sorts, you know, when it comes to pre-underwriting, you're really limiting the amount of solutions you can pull out the hat for them, as opposed to a much broader personal IP market. So, yeah, it's... you just need to be sensible about what's going to end up being best for the client. And not, like I said about the business protection in general, not just looking at some of the numbers and the setup and thinking, I know what this person needs. They need Relevant Life, Exec IP, and a little bit of Key Person. It's like, no, dig about, do your research, find out what's best for them.
If I could just come in on one other point about IP generally. There's one real big problem that I've come across, and it's to do with indexation. I'm sure that anybody, any advisor worth his salt, would always recommend indexation on an IP plan. And if you don't, there'd have to be a very, very good reason. And if not, in the event of a claim, you're liable to get sued for the client getting a fixed benefit not, and gradually losing pace with prices in the shops as the claim rolls by over the years and potentially decades. Most income protection insurers, in the event of a claim, and I'm thinking particularly Legal & General and Liverpool Victoria, operate a one strike and you're out policy. Now, what I'm talking about, they will write to the customer about 2 or 3 months in advance of the annual indexation. And if the customer declines the indexation, which they might do because they're already at max benefit, their salary hasn't gone up, or they just don't want to pay the extra premium, or for whatever reason, those two companies and a lot of other companies, those are the two main culprits that immediately spring to mind, they will immediately, upon that person saying, no, I don't want to index it, they might have had the policy running for, you know, several years, and it's the first time ever they've said no to indexation. And those two companies and a lot of others will immediately and permanently remove indexation from the plan. So that means in the event of a subsequent claim, the benefit will not be index-linked in payment and will be frozen. This does not benefit the customer. There are a few companies, there's one in particular who operates an unlimited no to annual indexation, and they're still indexed in the event of a claim. There are several who will allow you to go no twice consecutively, and then providing you don't say three times consecutively no, they will allow indexation in the event of a claim. There's one company I checked with last week, they will allow indexation to be no, but cumulatively over the term of a claim. Huge difference between cumulative and consecutive, of course. So just be really, really careful of companies that have recommended company purely on price, if you're not, and very often it's not in the policy conditions, you have to speak to the BGM, get them to send you an email on the point to check whether in the event of a claim, the benefits will be index-linked in payments. So just to throw that in.
That sounds like a detailed question set that my team are going to be looking into early in the new year, in terms of how many organisations will be allowing indexation, you know, whether it's just one decline it once and you've lost it, or multiple opportunities. Really, I'll take that one away.
Sorry, just to interject, but honestly, Dave, that is music to my ears. I feel like I'm always banging the drum about this and nobody listens. And if ever anybody's in a position of power in being able to lobby those insurers, certainly, like you say, on Exec IP, where we have no choice, we literally have no choice but to take the LV and the LG legal in general, where, like you say, one strike and you're literally out. So, yeah, and I think it's absolutely critical, because left unchecked, people are, you know, paying for a cover that wouldn't necessarily pay out because they've gone over the monthly benefit. It's just indexation should be, there should be more focus on it, I think.
I think some really valuable, there have been several suggestions that have emerged during this discussion, which I think are clear opportunities for product innovation by providers, some opportunities for some more planning tools that have been identified. And it does make me wonder, with the general increase in IP, are there other insurers missing a trick not offering executive IP? We're seeing far more IP written generally. But coming on, Adam Kaplan's been waiting very patiently. So Adam, back to you. You had some point you wanted to make.
Yeah, it's based on what Lee said, what Dave said, and actually what you've just said. So in regards to what Lee was saying, is exec IP can be really difficult when you look at the medical side of things. And we've had many cases in the past where, due to their medical conditions, exec IP is either not available or significantly more expensive. So you have to consider the personal route on medical grounds as well. That's as much as I need to say on that. But what Dave just said there is amazing, and I rarely come across anybody that knows that. So I've actually got all the research in front of me, and so I had a major issue with this with legal in general, which is what stemmed the research. So we can have a chat offline about this, because ultimately what Dave said is 100% accurate. LV and legal in general literally refuse it and lose it, and which is the issue I had sort of last year with a couple of clients. You then got let me just check my list. You've got Aviva, Cirencester Friendly, Holloway, and the Exeter, who all have unlimited indexation refusals. So I've actually got this in our master suitability report, because it's such a huge benefit that they will write to you every single year and say, this is what inflation is. If you refuse it every single year, they will still continue to write to you. The issue you have with legal in general and LV is that if you refuse it once, you've lost it forever, which is a big no-no for us. We just will not allow that to happen. Royal London have a little bit of a unique point on this, whereas if you refuse it twice in a row, they will remove it. But if you make a claim, they will actually index link it through a claim. They're the only ones that do it that way. And then the rest of them are, if you refuse it three in a row, then you'll lose it. So what you could do with the others is refuse it. Okay, refuse it twice and let it go through once. Refuse it twice, let it go through once. Refuse it twice, let it go through once. And you'll continue to maintain indexation. But if you refuse it three in a row, then you would lose it. Mm-hmm. But I've done all the research on this, Ian. So if you want to have a chat about...
Yeah, very keen to have a chat with you on that, Adam. Thank you very much indeed.
Ian, can I just say something about that original question on the income tax and the key person policies quickly? Now, I think it's an ongoing problem when you do a client review and policies, business protection policies have been structured incorrectly, where you've got a key person policy that actually the intention was to use it for shareholder protection and vice versa. So there are major tax implications when it comes to that. So it's vital to when you're doing an annual review to ensure that the policies historically have actually been written in the correct manner.
Yeah, very, very important point there. Well, thank you.
And there's some utility in that. I was just going to say, when you do a policy, ask for the person's accountant's details and write them. And share
100%, yeah.
Not only that, and that opens the door to an accountant who might have lots of other clients for you. So the amount of accounts I speak to that say, we see all these premiums going out, we have no idea what they're for, how we should be treating them for tax. And the client barely often knows. So to get an advisor all of a sudden say, I've just done this for your client, these are all the premiums, these are the lives assured, this is what they're for, this is how they all need to be treated in terms of tax. We've got some P11D here for shareholder and all the rest of it. They love it. And also, you've just made another professional contact that might help you with some other bits and pieces down the road.
Yeah.
Open those communication channels.
Great points, well made. I need to keep a close eye on time, Lee. If you don't mind, I'll take that as your closing remarks. I'm going to come to Carol for any brief closing remarks because we've got about 90 seconds left, and then to Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, I think I just reiterate on the cash flow modelling side, think of it as a crash test. Look out for those shortfalls beyond the retirement planning. That would be my final word, really. Look out for the reds.
Brilliant.
On my side, Ian, I think from my side, I think it's really around broader education for both protection and wealth advisors. I think that the current CII RO5, as well as the CISI section on protection, is not good enough. I further than that, I believe that protection advisors should have a level 4 equivalent from an education point of view. I think it is vital to us moving forward.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, just in closing, let me call out, we have one of our own protection forums on the 9th of January. That's going to be a really crucial session. I would urge people to attend. It's going to look at addressing harm and vulnerability, and particularly around separating policies. This is such a hot topic at the moment. Some people may not be aware that there's a real amount of harm taking place. There have been a number of cases identified recently where there have actually been attempts at murder of policyholders for surviving benefits. We've got a group of real experts coming to talk on that. It's a crucial session for anyone to attend. If you're involved in giving protection advice in any way or involved in compliance, Jess has just dropped two links into the chat. The first one is where you can go to request a ticket to that event. The second one is for our next Advisor Tech Forum. That's all about technology to support IHT. Again, I'm hearing wealth advisors telling me they've had more IHT leads in the last month than they've had in the previous 3 years. It's a boom area. We're also going to be coming back and looking at that in the context of protection as well on one of our forthcoming forums. Thank you, everybody. Really appreciate your participation. If there's anything else you will need to get in touch with us, those are my contact details. Have a great Christmas. Thank you very much to our panelists who've been tremendous.